mining just began with lots and lots of little mines and lots of smelting on the ground. And the smelting by the 1900s had pretty much killed all the vegetation on the hill. And so by 1920, there was some outcry by the public, and we began to get some regulation, and smelting was eventually moved over to Anaconda. But by then, the vegetation pretty much had been killed, and the holes and the mine waste had accumulated, and there was a lot of contamination at the surface from the smelting and the mine waste dumps. And so then, you know, that continued sitting there until the Superfund law and the opportunity for the state to engage with the Superfund program through the Natural Resource Damage Program for remediation, which activities have been going on for about 30 years in Butte. Remediation has pushed the contamination here and there and covered it, and so now there's clean soil at the surface and vegetation growing on what we call the caps, under the, you know, the repository of the contamination is under the caps. Mm-hmm. So there are repositories covered with clean soil and vegetation. And at this point, the restoration can begin, and that remediation brings the environment to human health standards, but it does not restore to natural ecological conditions. So restoration is the next phase, which is now beginning. Restoration, there is money. We can restore the remediated sites to some natural ecological function.
And Ms. Douglas,
that's where we are.
What does it look like, and what potentially in the future, because of this, could it look like?
So right now, the Butte Hill has some nice graded hillsides covered with a mix of grass and alfalfa. Some of it is like 20 years old. Some of it, they're still just finishing up. So there are these various sites that is primarily grass and some alfalfa. That particular mix does not really provide for ecological function. And so, of course, it will happen over time naturally. But with restoration, we have the opportunity to hasten this project and bring more plant diversity into these grassy sites. Plant diversity will then bring in insect diversity and bird diversity and small mammal diversity. And we will have the appearance of something more like natural meadows. So my project is for the vegetation, bring back wildflowers and shrub species so that, I don't know exactly how to say it, so we just encourage the continued development of more natural-looking and functioning ecosystems.
You use the phrase ecological function, so that, as you've just said, implies something other than aesthetic concerns.
Exactly. So we're not making gardens. It will look better because I think the human eye likes to look at a natural meadow. But the point is to bring back ecological function so that it's more sustainable. We will be less likely to have to spend time maintaining it, you know, doing weed control. The natural diversity will, in fact, be weed resistant, so then you have to do less weed control. The species we are using are drought tolerant and cold drought tolerant, and so they'll remain on the hill and disperse and continue expanding across the hillsides.
What kind of plants specifically are we talking about?
Oh my gosh, I have a list of about 120 species.
How about three?
So, okay, we start out with early spring flowers like Douglasia and Phlox. Then there are summer flowers, lupine, mountain dandelion, local weeds, and vetches. Those are legumes that provide nitrogen fixing capacity in the soil. Then the fall flowers are asters and goldenrod, and there's a little rumex that provides some red color on the hill.
Oh, it sounds actually beautiful, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, I mean, it will just look more natural. There will be some blooming flowers more or less all summer, so that provides, you know, flowers for the insects and then seeds for other insects and small mammals. So then you end up getting, you know, like I said, more of a functioning ecosystem.
It'll be weird not to see, oh, knapweed and toad flax and all the rest of it.
yeah, exactly. Oh, I think we can reduce the opportunity for those weeds to come across the Butte Hill. I think it's going to be a very beautiful place. I think it's better already.
Where does the seed stock come from?
It's very close. We're doing all of our seed collecting, almost all of our seed collecting, within a mile of Butte. So in the hills around the Big Butte, the East Ridge, Timber Butte, just south of town. So we're collecting very close, so we know that these seeds are adapted to this environmental condition.
So how much, then, do you and your friends and colleagues do, and how much does Mother Nature do? You guys do the initial work, and then Mother Nature kicks in and propagates the rest of it, I guess.
Well, we have to go out and find the seeds, know when they're available to collect. We collect them. We have to know which ones have to be treated. About half the seeds have to have a cold treatment, some of them up to 3 to 6 months before they'll germinate.
Oh, I'm sorry, a cold treatment meaning hardening? What does that mean?
Well, you put them in a refrigerator in moist conditions, so we put them in little bags of peat, so they stay moist and they stay cold, and that mimics having spent a year or two on the ground freezing and freeze-thaw, and so then it allows them to germinate when you bring them out and they warm up.
Huh.
So then we actually plant the seeds, and we start some of them in containers, so we can plant out containers, but we also, our trick is what we call forb sods. So we're building small patches about a meter square with a diverse number of species in each one. We start it in the greenhouse, then we put it outside to harden it after the seeds have germinated and the plants are growing. Then when it's hardened, then we move them out onto the Butte Hill in bigger patches, so we can put like 10 to 30 together in a patch. So we are actually building patches of natural meadow on the hill. And those will act as dispersal islands. As the plants mature and the seeds are available, then they'll blow out into the adjoining grassland and eventually disperse and make themselves bigger. So that's what we are doing. And then Mother Nature takes over by blowing the seeds across the hillsides and the insects moving them and caching them, and then some of them germinate. And so then Mother Nature does take over.
What does an ambitious project like this cost? And again, where does the funding come from?
So the funding comes from the Natural Resource Damage Program. And this phase of it, we have $1 million for 8 years. And this is the sixth year I've been working on this project. We started out with $300,000, which built us a new state-of-the-art greenhouse to work in, and a year of funding to get started. Then a second grant for $600,000 to continue exactly working on collecting the seed, starting the seed, and moving it out onto the sites in demonstration dispersal islands. Most of that money goes to salaries because we collect the seed for free, but we have to have, it's a very intensive hand operation. So that was a big enough success. They were willing to fund us for 8 more years.
Are there any teaching opportunities here, learning opportunities for Montana Tech students?
At this point, there are. In the past 6 years, I've had students help me, and they've done undergraduate research projects and senior research projects. So there have been a number of students work with me and use this project for their educational career. At this point, we have such a good track record. Montana Tech agreed to coordinate, and so Montana Tech and the Natural Resource Damage Program are each funding one half of a tenure track position. So we now have a brand new tenure track professor who will start this fall teaching restoration ecology and helping me run the program and develop a restoration ecology certification program for Montana Tech. I am very excited. I am very pleased. I think we've demonstrated very good success and we have very good support. And now we have 8 more years to continue, and a brand new professor who will come in, and he's young. He has good experience. He's eager to work on this project. He's had 3 or 4 years of teaching experience. So I think that we're set to move forward and turn this demonstration into something that will really change the face of Butte.
I've been speaking with Chris Douglas, and listen, I very much appreciate your time, and best of luck with this.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.